following podcast may contain spoilers.
Hello, and welcome to episode 77 of Binge Movies, the season 4.2 finale. It's a last movie standing elimination death match. Yes, hello to the season finale. I am Jason, usual host of the show. I am joined by our illustrious producer, the Reverend Combat Jones, who's going to be filling in for a myriad of other podcasters who have peppered this season. Of course, as we go through our season, we develop what we call our shortlist. We rank movies, and then the number ones from every ranking episode go onto our respective shortlist. And then at the end of the season, we determine off of that shortlist which one film will be preserved for all time, even beyond the end times, in our no copyright infringement intended vault. That's what we're here for, man. We're here to do video and movie preservation so that the dark movie overlords, the Not Walt Disney Corporation, they're pleased with us, they're pleased with our efforts, pleased with our sacrifices as they determine which media is worthy of preserving and which should burn forever in a cinema apocalypse.
You're gonna die in there! All of you! You are gonna die!
They just like death.
They like destruction, for sure. We, of course, have been doing this for a number of months now because of the global pandemic that's been going on. And so normally, you know, Pat would be here and he'd have his short list and I'd have mine. Unfortunately, this whole season kind of got mucked up. The whole year got mucked up. Episode order, a lot of our bonus features we're going to do, instant reactions. There are no movie theaters open. Movies are not being released. Nobody could have predicted that. So we like scheduled out the entire year last year.
And that just got
trashed. And so, so thankfully, we've had some amazing guest hosts who have filled in. You filled in a time or two, going from behind the board to in front of the mic, which has been very helpful. We've had Colby Mack at Colby Told Me, who's a great film reviewer. He's filled in. He helped us out on GoldenEye in 1995 part one.
And in the role of a lifetime.
We had Paul, old school friend of the show, podcasting life mate. Paul from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast.
Who you love to torture.
Love to torture him, yes. That's we have a interesting relationship, let's just put it like that. But yeah, so, yeah, he's just great, man. He's great to bring on and make him watch shitty movies. He came on, he did Going Bananas, and he ranked the WTF movies we did, which, whew. And then, of course, we had another friend of the show, Kevin Brackett, who was on earlier in the year. I think it was still this year.
Yeah, it was this year.
2020 feels like it's been 15 years. I don't know.
The world is a totally evil place. It'll kill you. It doesn't matter what your dreams and hopes and ambitions are. It doesn't matter if you have a new boyfriend or a new girlfriend or you've got plans for the future. You can forget those plans because you're going to wind up dead.
Yeah, he was on our Whiplash episode. Yep. He came back because he's like a Toy Story aficionado and Pixar aficionado. And he came back and dropped a lot of knowledge on us in our Toy Story episode. And then, of course, you popped in for the 1995 Part 2, where we ranked the top five highest-grossing films of 1995. And so you now have a short list of movies, most of which you didn't pick.
I have a real short list.
And then I have a short list, which are all movies I actually picked.
Yes.
Because I've been the rock of which the rest of you have broken yourselves upon in this season. So you're going to have to pick a movie.
Yes.
I'm going to have to pick a movie. And if you pick the movie I was going to pick, I'm screwed, and I have to go to another whatever. I'll give you that advantage. I'll give you the choice of whether or not you want to pick first, because then I get to argue first, right?
Yeah.
Or whether or not you want me to pick first, right? It'd be like a coin toss, right? Do you want to receive or do you want to defend? And I'll give you that advantage because you're at an extreme disadvantage.
I am.
Of the season, because these are not movies you picked. Let's start with the films that didn't quite make the cut, that made the cut to the short list, but didn't make the cut to our final selection. Let's look at our first eliminations for the season. Let's start by reviewing our short list. Week 1, I picked Avengers 2012. Week 2, I picked A Quiet Place. Week 3, I picked The Apple. Week 4, I picked 7. And then finally, I picked Toy Story. Those are my five films on my short list. What are the five films on your short list?
Week 1, Pat picked Marvel's The Avengers. Mm-hmm. Week 2, Pat picked Sicario.
Mm-hmm.
Week 3, Paul picked Xanadu.
Oh, I don't know. I understand.
Yeah, yeah. Week 4, Kobe told us 7.
Yeah, there you go.
And week 5, I chose Toy Story.
Okay, so fairly similar list, even though it's like a bunch of different people.
Yeah, very close.
Okay, let's start with what didn't quite make the cut. What did you eliminate first?
Xanadu. I actually had to...
Why?
Well, actually, I watched this week because I didn't feel right eliminating a movie I never saw.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
I want to give it and it roller skated its way right off my list. If you don't know why I eliminated it, watch it for about 20 minutes and the question will answer itself.
For the record, Paul is my own personal Xanadu.
Xanadu. Paul is the muse of binge movies.
Oh yeah.
He just calmed down, inspires, didn't want to fall in love, but he did.
He did, yeah.
Spoiler.
Oh, yeah, yep.
the Aussie that came.
Yeah, yep.
Fell in love with us and changed our world forever.
Changed my world, rocked my world, really.
Multiple times.
Obviously, my first elimination is going to be The Apple. 1980s, The Apple, the Menachem Golem disaster of a movie that I find entertaining on a pure camp kitsch, bizarro level. It was my top-ranked movie of the week. But that's in comparison to like shit like Tiptoes, right? So, I mean, come on. So it's obvious it was going to be my first elimination. So I don't think I need to say more about that.
Yep.
I would not recommend you watch it.
Avoid it.
unless you like really bizarre bad movies.
You know what the worst part was? Xanadu, like, doesn't even compare about the shit that you've made me watch over the years. Like, so I was watching Xanadu, and I was like, this isn't that bad. It's horrible, but like I can think of like 5 to 10 movies off the top of my head that I've had to watch mainly because of you.
Yeah It's a common thread.
It is.
Yeah, it's better than Megaforce.
Yeah. Better than Megaforce, Alien from LA.
Yeah.
Which is the only movie I think that I've never made it through.
Oh, there's a few that I didn't make it through. That was definitely one of them. Just shut it right off.
Yeah.
So okay, what is the next one up for your elimination?
Sicario.
That's a tough one.
I like the movie, but honestly, it's not my list.
Yeah.
That wasn't my number one of that week.
Okay.
Which is probably your number one of that week is one that I probably shouldn't give that away in case you choose that. But
I'm not gonna choose it.
Oh.
No, good. My next elimination is A Quiet Place.
Oh.
It's a good film, but we have not had enough time to see if it's an enduring film.
That was my point. Like with Sicario seems like it's good in the reference of now.
Yeah.
But in 20 years, is it going to have the same effect? Are they going to be dealing with the same stuff? So that's why I limited. I don't know if it had the time-lasting factor.
Yeah.
And impact.
We actually have a listener question I'll answer after the elimination of what is the difference between how we, or I guess, review movies, rank movies, and then what goes into the vault. I'm going to answer that a little later on in the episode. The bottom line for me, when we started thinking about the vault.
Yeah.
What's going to go in there to be preserved for all time? We're thinking about cinematic impact, cultural impact. We're also thinking about, is this film itself going to endure for decades to come, right? A Quiet Place, it's a very, very solid film. It's a very good film. I just don't know, in 25, 30, 40 years, are we really going to be referencing back to it? I have my doubts, and so for that reason, it didn't make the list, didn't make the final cut.
Yeah, same here.
All right, what is the next movie up for elimination?
A lot for the same reason, 7.
I'm right there with you.
Seven is gone. I like the movie. I liked it a lot more back when I first saw it in the 90s. And now the Grit was more of that era.
Yeah.
But great movie. If you haven't seen it, I recommend seeing it.
Sure.
It's a great film. But it's just, for me, it doesn't have the impact of the two that are left.
Yeah,
both of us.
And Colby and I, you know, effusively praised that film. It was hands down the number one for that week.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's not... I mean, unless you have something like The Apple or Xanadu on your list.
Yeah, those are easy eliminations.
For the most part, the short list is kind of a pick 'em. It's they're all... We're not talking about, like, well, this movie's shit, right? For the most part, we're talking about typically the best of the best, or at least somebody's opinion of what the best of the best is. But then you have to do, like, the best of the best of the best.
It's the elite.
Yeah, the
what
absolute elite.
Is the
elite.
Best of the elite.
Yeah, and, you know, Seven, I think, is a great film. I really like it. I effusively praised it. I think Fincher's gone on to do better stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a craftsmanship standpoint, I think he's gone on. I think he's got two or three other films in his filmography that, because he was he's matured as a filmmaker. And I think Seven's a great movie, great script. Is, you know, really basically a horror movie, and it's very disgusting. But I think, and also to some extent, I think some people disagree with me. I think Spacey being in it kind of hurts the film. At least he's like an absolute total psychopath, right?
At least he's believable, right?
Right. So at least he's not like the hero of the film, but still, I think there's something icky about
if
seeing
if you ran
it.
An orphanage for troubled youth,
troubled boys,
it'd be a troubled movie.
Yeah, correct.
But right. Luckily, yeah, you're right.
Luckily, it's not the Cider House rules. It's exactly. He's a psychopath who chops people's heads off, yeah. Thank God. But yeah, so David Fincher, great film. I think he's done better work as a director. So, unfortunately, Seven is eliminated. That means you get to pick first. Which film are you going to pick to argue that should be added to our no copyright infringement intended vault to be preserved for all time? What's your argument? What are you starting with?
Marvel's The Avengers.
Okay.
That's my pick.
All right. I am going to go, of course, now I have no fucking choice. I'm going to defend Toy Story.
Yes.
All right. So I get to argue first.
Ooh.
Because you picked first.
Ooh.
All right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the rules, man. Those you got the pick, so I get the first argument. Toy Story launched a cinematic universe of its own called the Pixar films. It was originally started in 1995 and has gone up until 2020, and they were supposed to release some. That's, as we record this, still up in the air, right? For 25 years, Pixar has been releasing films, the vast majority of which have not been sequels, the vast majority of which have been original material. It all started 25 years ago with one little animated film that, as a film, in and of itself, is a solid film, is a good film. It's a film that, for me, I'm somebody who wasn't even really effusive about it like Kevin Brackett was, right? I still gave that movie a 9.25. Me, who's not the world's biggest animation fan, who thinks there's better Toy Story movies than Toy Story, still gave that movie a 9.25, which means the movie is really only a disappointment because other movies in the Toy Story series and the Pixar franchise that it launched are damn near perfect, if not perfect. So you're comparing, almost perfection to perfection. And because of that, I have to vote for Toy Story because think about everything Kevin said. Think about all the things that had to fall into a line for George Lucas to sell a tech firm to Steve Jobs and for it to get turned into an animation studio, among other things, be bought by Disney, right? We start with this movie. The script, which could have been a nightmare, ended up being Joss Whedon, who would go on to be the architect of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in its first iterations, is working on Toy Story beforehand. And they have completely and totally pushed the technology of CGI animation forward in a way that now, as much as I'm a fan of 2D, We're talking about the vault. We're talking about history. We're talking about cultural impact. There is no doubt that from 1995 forward, this was a film that changed the landscape of cinema. And it introduced animated films that not only appealed to children, but appealed to their parents. Because Toy Story was one of the first animated films that had enough material in it and enough references within it that could appeal to both demographics, which would be the flavor of almost every Pixar movie that would come afterwards. So that is my opening argument for why Toy Story belongs in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Launch of the Avengers does not. It's not really the launch. Iron Man's the launch, but the first crossover.
Yeah. And that's so what we're doing right now is we're looking at two great films on their own.
Yeah.
And the two impact of the franchises and the genres that they kind of launched.
Yes, right.
And I'm going to say...
They're both juggernauts,
both
for sure.
Juggernauts.
Yeah.
But Marvel's Avengers was the initial point. It took it from being a really successful franchise to, you can make the argument, which I'm going to, that Marvel, the MCU, is the most dominant movie franchise ever in film. And here's why, right? It provided the blueprint. It was the first one that broke $1 billion. Since then, 9 movies have broken $1 billion. 9. How many Pixars? I should have looked that up. Didn't know.
Several.
Several. But, yes. But nothing like them. It, of the 2010, top five, top 10 grossing films, 5 were from the MCU.
Okay.
Including this one.
Yes.
This is the most dominant movie franchise in human history. And before that, you had Iron Man, which made about 500 mil. You had Iron Man 2, 600 mil. Thor, 400. Incredible Hulk, which made 200. So there was nothing near it until this. And then all of a sudden, you have like 8 other films making over $1 billion and just dominating the film industry. And now, honestly, just because it made a lot of money doesn't mean it necessarily is good, but that's not true about this, right? This movie also, to go back to the franchise, it created a cultural relevance. You look at how many, it brought nerd culture into mainstream. So you have everyone going to comic cons, and now you have everyone wearing t-shirts. You look at, now people are wearing Marvel masks to work. I have a coworker who does that. So it created a whole culture. Like, who knew Iron Man before these came out? Nobody did. The general population didn't know who he was. This franchise and this movie made Captain America cool. Captain America was a dork when we were growing up. Like, when you're playing video games, you'd be like, I get Wolverine. I get, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
Oh, I get Captain
Batman,
America.
Superman. Yeah. Or, yeah, if you're playing Marvel, yeah.
Captain America was a Cyclops of the Marvel world. Except Cyclops never dug his way out. But in this film, and I think it started in the first Avengers, like, I could kind of, or the first
Iron
Captain,
Man.
Captain America,
oh,
the first Avengers.
America. Yeah.
Like that, I can kind of get behind this. This is okay. Yeah. And when this movie came out, it took Captain America to being like a really good character that everyone cared about.
Sure.
And so it defined a genre.
Yeah.
And that genre went to dominate
yeah.
a whole decade, and it still is. It was more dominant than the Pixar has been. And this is the movie that really launched it to that stratosphere.
Yeah.
That film franchise has been more dominant and more impactful than any other.
Sure.
And this movie has been more impactful and key to that franchise than any other one. So there's no doubt of its relevance in the industry. It could be maybe one of the more important films of our lifetime in defining what would come to be pop culture.
Sure.
So let's look at the film. This, the one thing that stood out to me the first time I watched it is this is the quickest 2.5 hour movie I've ever seen. So this is a 2.5 hour movie that feels like 90 minutes, where we just watched a bunch of films that took a 90 minute film and make it look like 2.5 hours.
Right.
The pacing is almost perfect. It's textbook.
Of the Avengers?
The Avengers, yeah.
No, the middle bottoms out.
The middle is a little slow, but other than that, It's really well paced.
I'm saving my piece.
You'll save your piece.
You're gonna have to wrap up here soon, though.
Yeah, I'll wrap up here soon. The casting's perfect except for one. Colby Smulders is... She's a side character. If you're gonna miss, you're gonna miss. But everyone else kills it. Loki's a great villain.
Sure.
And the only thing I didn't like about Loki is the ending where they smash him. They took one of my favorite villains and they made him where you can't take him seriously for the rest of the franchise. Didn't like that. But, I mean, the casting's perfect. Everyone that you see on film, you think of them as the character, not as the actor, and they have a bunch of A-list actors.
Sure.
So, performance, direction, great. There's so many epic parts about this movie, and it's the whole movie's iconic. From the score is iconic, the blue beam is iconic, which if you're struggling with your blue beam, log on to Blue Chew right now and put in promo code Jason's Big Blue Beam and save 20% off your next order.
We got to work on getting more succinct promo codes.
Yeah, I know. It's really weird. I think that they should have a new test to see if you're a sociopath. If you watch the scene where they have that circle around all the Avengers and you don't smile or you don't have a positive emotional response, you're a sociopath. Right? So... That is like one of the most iconic. Like every time you watch it, you just feel amazing. When you hear the song, you feel amazing. This is the most rewatchable Avengers movie. It might be the best Avengers movie.
Oh, Infinity War's better.
I like this one better. Because here's the reason.
This one feels like a TV show in its direction.
I feel like I have to prepare myself for Infinity War because it's long.
Yeah, yeah.
This one I can just sit down and watch. It's the most rewatchable of the Avengers.
Okay.
And if you're putting it in a vault, you want it to be rewatchable.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not saying this film's perfect, but for what it is, everything about it is pretty much enjoyable.
Yeah.
Everything about it is iconic.
Yeah.
And it started the most dominant film franchise ever. Or it didn't start, but it put it on its map. It took it from being a series of successful films to being the most dominant, not only film, but most dominant cultural influence of the 2010s. That is my argument.
Sure. Okay, you done?
Maybe.
Let's start with box office. Pixar, over 25 years, has made 22 films. Which, when you think about it, takes an average of 2 to 3, maybe even 4-plus years to animate those films, is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
The Pixar brand has grossed $11.9 billion over 25 years. The Marvel Cinematic Universe has grossed $22.5 billion in 23 movies in 12 years. Now you're going to say, well, it's grossed, you know, almost double what Pixar has, so therefore it's the more important franchise. That's one way of looking at it. There's another way of looking at it, which means Pixar is not producing, as I said in my opening argument, that many sequels. They have a few. They got Cars 2 and this Incredibles 2. There are sequels in there, but there are a lot of original films, which means from Toy Story forward, yes, there's Toy Story 2 and 3, but for Toy Story forward, every single time, almost, that they go to the well, they are doing completely original worlds, completely original characters that have almost no connectivity other than a few Easter eggs, right? Just, you know, the Planet Pizza truck or whatever, okay? Marvel had the advantage of you had to watch every single movie like a TV show to make sense to even get to Avengers and beyond. You had to watch the movies because so many of those movies in that cinematic universe do not stand on their own. The cinematic universe collectively comes together, but a lot of those movies are pretty mediocre, including in the first phase. We ranked the first phase. We found the vast majority of those movies take-it-or-leave-it films. You watch them once, they're disposable. If you're producing 23 films in 12 years, the vast majority of what you're producing is disposable. I care, as a non-animation fan, more about the relationship between Woody and Buzz than I do almost any character in the MCU. in one film, in the last 15 minutes, they get me to care more about those characters than 23 movies in 12 years got me to care about anybody. It took Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man and make how many different appearances in how many different movies, and they had to kill the fucker for me to even start to even really care about him. And here's why. You want to talk about appeal. You want to talk about appeal. These movies appeal to everybody. Here's two things. One, animation has historically primarily appealed to children. Pixar broke that barrier, which means they were actually working at a disadvantage from a box office perspective, because they not only had to appeal to kids, and it wasn't just, you know, parents reluctantly taking their kids, because a lot of animated features don't do that well in theaters. They do better on home video. So for Pixar films to gross almost $12 billion, that means, which no other animated, I mean, Disney never came close to that, right? That means they have to appeal. They're working at disadvantage. They are a niche audience of a niche audience. The way that Marvel appealed to everybody was they stripped their own characters of all of their emotional weight and all of the actual resonance, which Pixar hasn't done. Pixar has invested more into the relationship between toys and their toy owners than they have Iron Man's alcoholism. They just stripped everything about that character away, made it just a joke, made Tony Stark just this glib character who's laughing, occasionally will have a cocktail in his hand. We're supposed to infer he's an alcoholic, and that's what we're supposed to go with. They you know, yes, they got Captain America right. What other character did they get right? You said it yourself. They fucked up Loki. Do I really care about Bruce Banner? Do I really care about the Incredible Hulk? Do I really care about Black Widow? Black Widow's not even getting her own movie until 2020, right? Do I care about any of those characters as much as a Pixar film, which this is the start of it, makes me care about it. I cried more in Inside Out with Mr. Bing Bong or whatever. I cried more in Toy Story 3, which we wouldn't get without Toy Story. All of those other movies have emotionally, in one film with completely brand new characters, for the most part, they suck you in, they draw you in, and you're emotionally invested. Marvel, it took them 23 films because they watered down their own product. They watered down their storylines, they watered down their villains, they watered down everything to make the most commercialized, easily accessible, easily digestible, throwaway films. That goes to my last point, which is endurance. Not just rewatchability, but endurance. We have 25 years of history. Other than that dog, Spud, or whatever his name was.
People are horrible, too.
Which is horrible, yeah, right? But yes, okay? The story itself, the characters itself, the ensemble. You would talk about the ensemble. You would talk about perfect casting. They got Colby Smulders in there and a couple other people are like, what the fuck? Right? And they're still figuring the characters out. Toy Story comes out. They nailed every character, every voice, everything straight out the gate. They're not like tinkering and rewriting and retconning characters 15 movies in and going, oh, well, this character doesn't work. We got to figure this out. Every character has worked. Every character has been consistent in Toy Story. And more often than not, you talk about Coco. You talk about Inside Out. You talk about the quality of the films that come out of Toy Story. Toy Story has already endured. It already is one of the most rewatchable movies of all time. It already is a movie that has now crossed generations. Pixar was the most dominant brand of the 2010s. Or Marvel was. Undeniable. But Pixar has been around since 1995. They were dominant in the 90s with their disadvantages of having to create original material almost every single time and the disadvantage of being animated. So there's a whole portion of the population who are not going to go see those films. Without watering down characters, without watering... I mean, think about Up. First 10 minutes of that movie is about death in a kid's movie. That has more balls than anything Marvel has ever done. And anything they've ever done. They killed half their characters and they brought them all back except for one guy. That cinematic universe has no balls because all it is about making money. So if all it takes to make it into the vault is that you make a lot of money, then the Transformers movies ought to be in the vault. Armageddon ought to be in that vault. There's a bunch of movies that ought to be in that, fucking Godzilla ought to be in that vault. But we discriminate against that. We said, yes, that's important. Yes, it's a cultural influence, but what are the actual quality of the movies? When we went back and looked at Phase 1, and you can't deny it yourself because you watched them with us, we were like, these movies up to and including the Avengers. Yeah, the Avengers is the best of the first batch, but it's just sort of like, okay, it's got its moments, but it's sort of like, it's a blue beam in the sky fighting faceless aliens. Okay, what does that mean? The cool factor of seeing that for the first time has worn off a little bit. It's not the same thing anymore. And so for that reason, I think that Toy Story is a more enduring film in and of itself. I think it has greater depth of characters in and of itself because Avengers even itself is relying on how many films before it to build its characters. Toy Story has got one movie. They got one shot at it. And it surpasses Avengers. It just does. Maybe not in box office totals, but in endurance, appeal, and quality.
When you rewatched Avengers,
yeah,
did you shave your pubes?
But
if I recall properly,
yes.
When you rewatch this,
yeah,
for a good part, you were cleaning up your pubic hair.
This is correct.
So you're telling me that a movie that is more rewatchable.
You want to know why I was cleaning up my pubic hair? Because I'm not even an animation fan, and I've seen Toy Story more than I've ever seen Avengers.
Oh, so it's that compelling that you can't turn away. So
if you see a film 100 times, no matter how compelling that film is, when it's a 90-minute kids movie and you don't like animation, and Marvel's technically more in my wheelhouse, and I didn't need to watch it because I've watched Toy Story for 25 years.
Regardless.
I've seen Avengers maybe 4 times, and I don't ever need to watch it again. I don't ever need to watch that movie ever again.
And I feel the same way about Toy Story. Here's the other thing. You don't even like the first 2/3 of Toy Story, according to what you said on your own podcast.
Yes, that is the review of the film itself. But I still gave it a 9.25. Beyond my subjective experience. We're not talking about my subjective experience of the movie. We're talking about the movie's cultural legacy and impact.
Okay. So you made, and they also only made 4 Toy Stories.
Yes.
And it's a lot harder to keep yourself straight over 22 movies than over 4.
And if you're not developing your characters, which is what Marvel did, just don't develop your characters. Just make them all jokesters.
Not all of them are jokesters.
How many memorable villains do they have?
They have Loki. He's memorable.
Yeah, but they ruined him in the first movie based on your own argument.
They have... I'm not good with names, and you know this. That's not fair.
You got Thanos. That's who you
Thanos,
have. That's
you
it. Have, That's it.
Thanos. Red Skull's memorable.
No.
Yeah, he is.
And what do? They kill him off in the first film.
He comes back, kind of.
What was his plan?
His plan was world domination and subject the world under his power.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the film.
That's thin. That's thin plotting. Toy Story is about the existential crisis of what it is to be a toy in the human world. And they have to get you to buy into this toy world where toys have personal problems and dilemmas and our fear of being replaced. I mean, that's a stupid concept on paper, and everybody
easily
bought into it.
Ultron was a good villain, even though
he
was Tony Stark.
Yeah. No.
Ultron was a villain.
He was a villain. He wasn't a good villain.
He had Loki twice. He cast twice. Obadiah was a good villain. That was in the first film.
You're talking about the movie where the script was so bad they had to improvise all their own lines?
Yeah. Yeah, that one. They pulled it off still, and it's still believable.
Yeah.
Whiplash is a good film, but they didn't do it well enough.
Nope.
When we watched the first
phase of the Marvel movies, the one thing we said is that they're all formulaic. It was the exact same movie over and over and over again. Right.
But they still make it work. And you're telling me Pixar is not the same way?
No. It really isn't, no. It really isn't. And we're talking about endurance for all time.
It's also, again, it's easier to have new ideas. It's harder to... How many sequels absolutely stink?
How many movies utilize the technology that had never been used before to that extent? Avengers didn't do it. Avengers actually used the technology that was partially created through films like Toy Story.
Yeah, they made it better. So what I'm saying is
You're talking about history. You're talking about cultural impact. You have to look at the technology and say, What would not advancing. This is the first animated CGI complete film in film history, and you don't believe that that deserves to be preserved? Just because
not over Avengers. Not
Avengers has made a shit ton of money?
No, because it's changed culture. It literally has changed culture. Toy Story has not changed culture. It's changed animation.
How has Avengers changed culture?
Because it's made nerd culture acceptable.
By stripping it of all of its nerdiness.
Yeah. It still did it. Just because you don't like the method in which it did doesn't mean it didn't accomplish what I said.
But it, you know, because it didn't make nerdiness acceptable.
It did.
No, it
yes,
took
it
ner-
did.
No.
Yes,
it sold out nerdiness, took the IP and made it mass consumable.
But then
Avengers
it led to other things.
It's not nerdy anymore. What's nerdy about it?
But
when you change your characters, you change the plot points, and you make it basically serialized episodes of a longest running TV show with hundreds of millions of dollars behind it.
It's pretty
fucking easy.
It made it okay to like nerdy things. And it made it culturally acceptable to like nerdy things.
By making them not nerdy.
But other things
the
are still
The greater
nerdy.
Feat would be to retain the essence and of the plots and the characters and then get the world to buy into it. Which is what Pixar is having to do. Pixar is having to create original worlds that are bizarre. Think
but
about Wall-E.
It's easier to make new worlds than it is to try to make a giant universe work. It really is. Because the more films that you make, like look at Star Wars. The more films they add to Star Wars, the least it makes sense and it worse they make the franchise. What they succeeded with Marvel is even though it was stripped down, it's because it had to be for all of it to make
but
sense.
But at some point you have to come back down to what is the better film. We're not putting the MCU into the vault.
No, part
and we're also
of,
not
part
putting
of
Pixar
what
into
part of
the
what
vault.
You said was that it had to have cultural relevance.
That's part of
the
scope.
Reason why
that's
it's
part
in
of
the
scope.
And you even gave high 80s to Marvel to this movie.
And I gave a 9.25 out of Toy Story. I don't even like animated films.
You're
what,
right.
What
you're
ranking
right.
did I give Avengers? What, an 8.5?
So that's one category.
Because it's a mediocre
that's
movie.
That's one category. And the other category is cultural impact. Which do I think is a better film? If you're asking me straight up, what do I think is a better film? Toy Story is probably just a little bit above it. But if you're asking me what had the greater cultural impact as we sit today, as we make it today, we have enough time to look at it because it's been 8 years.
It's been 25 years with Toy Story.
But we still have
and
enough time.
And it endures to this day.
Let me finish my sentence.
Sure.
I think that Marvel has had more of a stamp in its time period. Culture really hasn't been that different because of Pixar. But culture has been a lot more different as far as pop culture and what's popular. Marvel has been a lot more. T-shirts, all that stuff. Like, how many people did you see walk around with Iron Man or Captain America shields on their shirts before this? None. You see them all the time now. You have guys at football games dressing up like Captain America.
Sure.
You'd be laughed out of the stadium, and that's cross. You know, superhero comic books do not mesh with football, but you have that cultural crossover because it's become so synonymous. Everyone, if you walk out in the street, everyone knows who the hell all those characters are.
So so really what it boils down to, and we're not going to be able to decide this in this episode.
What I'm saying is they're close enough. Yeah, I'll give you Toy Story is a little bit better film, but it's not like this is a shit film. What I'm saying is...
I'm saying it's a mediocre film. Which is what my review was. Avengers was, this is a pretty mediocre film, but it's the best of a lot of other mediocre movies.
What I'm saying is they're both good films. Toy Story is a better film, but I think the margin's close enough that when you look at the cultural impact, you can't deny of what this film did on not only the movie industry, but American culture at large.
I'm saying whatever impact that Marvel has had on pop culture.
If it was so easy.
Whatever movie, the Avengers, whatever impact Avengers has had on pop culture, which I cannot take away from it, I would say Toy Story had an equal impact on the technology that makes movies like Avengers possible.
If it was
and so, it is a better movie.
If it was so easy to do, to follow this formula, and to do
but
it...
Yes,
do
but we're not
it,
just talking
on,
about the cinematic universe. We're talking
let
about Avengers.
Finish, let me finish. If it was so easy for this formula to work that the movies didn't have to be good, go watch the DC universe. Go watch the DCU who tried to duplicate it and couldn't.
So you're hanging your hat completely on the cinematic universe aspect of it, and not the merit of the film. I have not really heard you advocate that much.
I just
for
said,
the film itself.
I said a whole bunch about it.
You talked about money, and you talked about how popular it is.
Yes, because that's the strength compared. But you look at it. I did praise the film. Yeah. I said I like this film. I pointed out how iconic it was. Like no one, if you've watched these, you hear the song, the theme song. Ba-da-bum, 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 and you go to a certain emotional place. This movie has an emotional impact. Whether it's cheap or not, it's an emotional impact on everybody. And there's certain aspects of it so iconic that it stirs up emotion in the people who've watched it and in American culture. So this movie is a good movie. I start off by saying that. Just because I can see that Toy Story is probably the better of the two, which I am, because that's how I feel. I'm not going to lie just because we're in a debate. I think that because of the cultural impact is so high, that's what makes it something that should be preserved, right? Because
is the cultural impact of the singular film Avengers?
Yes, because
not that's a factor of it, but let's look at the individual movie now.
Yes, because
you think that individual movie on its own has a bigger cultural impact than a movie that's endured, basically being completely outdated into animation, but still works on a thematic and story level, and is 25 years old?
Yes.
And people are still watching it to this day?
Yes. Because this movie, like you said, there's a blueprint.
So when the Disney Plus launched, and the number one movie that was, for like the first week, was Toy Story, and not Avengers?
Because there's been so many Avengers.
There's been so many Toy Stories. There's been four Toy Stories and four fucking Avengers.
Because people have been streaming Avengers for the last how many years on Netflix?
People have been watching Toy Story since VHS.
But it wasn't on Netflix, was it?
I don't know if it was.
It wasn't.
I don't think it was on Netflix.
No. So
or it was years ago.
It was years ago. Yeah. So people have been watching Avengers because it's been on Netflix for like 6 years. They had the first time to watch Toy Story in years and share it with their kids, where they've been watching Avengers with their kids forever. It's a false number, false indicator.
Well, we're going to have to end it there. We're not going to be able to cite here because there is no third party here to be able to decide. The Dark Movie Overlords haven't provided us anything. And so instead, we are going to turn to you, the binge lords, who've listened to this episode. We are going to put a poll up when this episode debuts. We're going to put a poll up to decide who do you think won? Who do you think had better arguments? Myself or Combat Jones? And what movie would you pick to be preserved for all time? Once again, this is for the film to be preserved for all time. Which movie do you think is more deserving of preservation as its impact in cinema history? It's whatever you pick. It was coming down to 1995's Toy Story versus 2012's Avengers. You vote, and whatever you decide, that's the one that's going to go into the vault to be preserved for all time.
And when the vote comes back for Avengers, we can watch it.
I'm sure it will, because I think the demographic of people who are on Twitter will probably vote for Avengers. You're talking about a bunch of 35-year-old white males. I think they probably will vote for Avengers.
I know, that's why I picked it.
Well, that brings us to some listener mail, I guess, some questions and answers. The questions and response, I don't know if we'll give an answer. The question was, what is the difference between how I review a movie, rank a movie, and decide what goes into a vault? Because on some episodes, let's say I give one film like an 8.5, and then another episode I give another movie that I seem way more excited about or way less excited about the same score. The scoring is not, there's not an objective standard of like, okay, this type of movie is always going to be an 8. This type of movie is always going to be a 9. I view each individual movie on its own terms. And what is it trying to accomplish? What do I think it's trying to accomplish? How effective is it in trying to accomplish it? What are the technical qualities? What are the sort of film craft aspects of it? You know, cinematography, sound design, score, direction. Obviously, story is a big thing for me. How engaging is the story? And then it's also my subjective experience of what did the movie make me feel? Did it intend to make me feel that? Was it trying to engage me? Was I engaged? So what that means is If a movie has a budget of, it comes from a major motion picture studio, like say a Disney, for instance, it's got tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars behind it. And yet the story's, it looks good, it has all that stuff down, but the story's kind of lacking, or the characters aren't very well developed or whatever. I could recognize the larger influence of that film. It's, you know, box office returns. It's, you know, it's important to a lot of people who aren't me. I may not be the target audience. I try to also put myself in the shoes of who is this for, right? But to me overall, the story might be lacking, characters might be lacking. So I'm going to bump that down, because with all of those resources, it should be a better movie than it is. And so therefore, it's like, say, an 8.5. Then I might see an independent film that doesn't have a tenth of those resources. That is really depending on the strength of its performances, direction, character. It's really more about the craftsmanship. On a shoestring budget, that movie should be very mediocre, but instead it overachieves. And so it could also, I could be more effusive in praising a smaller movie, but only give it a B grade, because on paper it should be a C or a D, right?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have a giant studio behind it, or big names, or a franchise tied to it, or whatever.
Yeah, McConaughey, Gary Oldman.
Oh, no. Tiptoes, though.
Tiptoes. I mean, you expect more out of it, and so you... But, I mean, it just comes up a little... I can't say.
Oh, no, you can't, no.
It doesn't meet expectations.
Yeah, it doesn't meet expectations, right? And so you kind of have to look at it like that. Some movies are, with what they have on paper, are underachievers, and some are overachievers. So that's why two different movies that you know, end up with the same score, but I feel differently about that score, you know, because it's not, you know, a movie that could have been a 10, but is a 9 or an 8, is a bit of a disappointment. A movie that should be a 7, but ends up being an 8 is, you got to go see this, because you don't think it's going to be as good as it is. So that's how the reviews work. The way that the rankings work is I give individual grades to every movie. I don't really compare the grades until I'm done watching all the movies, because I don't want to be like, well, I kind of don't like this movie. So I kind of don't like this movie. So I'm going to make it a 5, but you know, I'm going to bump the score up on this one, so I make it a 4. I just don't do that. The way that I view it is each movie is its own individual grade, and that's where it depends on the rankings. That's why a few times I've had ties, and then sometimes when I do change a score, it's only because looking back on it, say I gave both, you know, 7.8, right, out of 10. I'm like, okay, now I can kind of compare the two and go, okay, they're both 7.8s, but which one do I think is a little bit higher? So, okay, I might bump that one up to an 8. But that happens very rarely. For the most part, the grade I give is the grade I give, and that, you know, the points, and that's what I stick to. Now, as far as the vault on an episode like this, I'm taking in its objective quality as much as I can, my subjective experience of the film, but that's a little bit more reduced, right? And then I'm really focusing on legacy, impact, endurance, things like that, because when you're talking about preservation, I mean, you think about a museum. You don't just put any old thing in a museum. You don't put any old thing into a vault. You only put those things in for preservation that are of historical, cultural significance, and of a significance that's going to endure. It's not just a flavor of the month kind of a thing. It's not a fad, but it's something with longevity behind it, something with quality behind it, something that it has a proven track record of significance behind it. So essentially, you're moving kind of from the more subjective with the reviews, hopefully to kind of the least subjective with what we decide goes in the vault, or what we argue for goes in the vault. So that's kind of the explanation of, you know, our three-tier system: reviews, rankings, and the vault. Thank you for that question from one of our binge lords. If you have a question, you can hit us up on Twitter at
Binge Movies,
or you can email the show bingemovies@gmail.com and let us know. Also, as always, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or pretty much everywhere. So if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, find us on your favorite platform. We're available there. We appreciate it. If you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that's the thing that helps the show out the most. Now's the time to follow us on Twitter, because you get to vote. You get to decide who's the winner of the season. Is it going to be Toy Story, or is it going to be Marvel's Avengers? Well, it's definitely been an interesting season.
Say the least.
And challenging season. And maybe the most challenging thing about it is to decide which is going to be preserved for all time. We're leaving it in the hands of our binge lords. Once again, get on Twitter. When this episode drops, we will also put a poll up. You vote, and we will come back very shortly with our instant reaction to the binge lords vote and to determine which one gets added to the vault.
Yeah, your decision. You know, you know, it's funny, the season 4.1, we thought we had difficulties with...
I thought about that.
Computers dying. My dog biting the Amazon guys who were recording.
Yeah.
And we're like, man, this thing just seems snake bitten.
Yeah.
Little did we know that was the easiest season of the year.
Of the year so far. Yeah. So here's hoping it gets a little better for all of us after this season. So, hang on a second. I'm getting a transmission here. Okay. All right. I don't know what this says. It says, dear host, you have been selected for entry into the Nemesis program. You will now be permitted to leave the bunker and re-enter society.
Oh.
You will be... What the hell? You'll be relocating and assuming ownership of a video rental store in Akron, Ohio. Akron, Ohio? Where the fuck is that? You'll be participating in a movie ranking deathmatch tournament. In these uncertain times, you have our sympathies. Binge on. That's, first of all, that's my fucking line.
Copycats.
The Dark Movie Overlords.
Huh.
I
mean, you have to be.
I don't really know what this means. I'm going to have to take this up with HR. To me, it sounds like are we going out to Akron, Ohio.
I think so.
But they want us to open a video rental store in 2020?
Do people still... I mean, it's a front.
For what?
I don't know.
Well, folks, apparently...
I got it. It's finally more dangerous out there than it is in here, so they're sending us...
Oh, no.
Right? So it's finally more dangerous out in the world than it is down here.
Oh, no.
It's another ploy, man. It's, I mean...
Oh, no.
He just wants to torture us, man.
It appears that we are going to be leaving the bunker for the first time ever in 5 years. It appears that we are being forcibly relocated to a shit town in Ohio called Akron to open in 2020 a video rental store during a global pandemic. Looks like next season, season 4.3, is going to be completely different. I don't know what the show is going to be at that point.
Maybe we've seen the light.
I have an idea. We're going to have to get more details. I assume they're going to give us more details. The internet would probably just kill us. I don't know. Find out next season on season 4.3. In the meantime, get on Twitter.
Binge movies.
Vote. And we'll be back with the result. I've been in here so long, I don't know that I can reintegrate into society.
Yeah, let's not watch Shawshank Redemption as the first film.
Binge Movies was here. All right, folks. Looks like the world's changing and we're changing with it. So until next time, binge on.
So, you know what? I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. I'm not fucking leaving! The show!